You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, peppy, peachy, and perceptive party pals. Oh my God. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 7, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and along with me are our extremely excellent, exceptional, and eccentric expert co-host contestants.
Woo! Yeah.
And we have...
I'm Colin.
Dana.
I'm Chris.
Yay! Chris is back!
I'm back!
Woo! Yeah!
Yay! So Chris is back with us today, and the gang's all back together, and our team is complete. And speaking of which, I'm getting quite a bit of mail from listeners asking
for me to come back.
Yes.
Thank you all. Yes.
And they're also asking us for our personal tips and strategy when it comes to pub trivia, because Colin, Dana, Chris, and I have been on a pub trivia team for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Mm. And of course, we've come up with our own kind of house rules and tricks.
Right.
And it's good for us to share some of our air quote secrets, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit.
In case you're looking to start your own team and rip off our trade secrets.
Yeah, exactly. If you're one of the teams that competes against us and you're listening right now,
please disregard all
of this.
I mean, it seems like our most basic rule you always have is, like, don't censor yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the first rule of brainstorming. Like, no matter how stupid or fleeting a thought in your head, just get it out because it may spark a thought in somebody else's head.
Oh, yeah. First of all, there were so many instances early on when somebody would say, oh, God, I was thinking that, but I thought it was wrong, so I didn't say it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, say everything you think. And as you kind of said, like, even if you don't know the answer, if you know something about the topic that's at hand, just start talking about it. Because, again, that might jog somebody else's memory and be like, oh, it's not that, but it is this.
Right.
Thank you for saying that. Like, that's happened to us so many times.
Our other – actually, this is really helpful – is always go for the more topical.
Yeah.
Especially with current events, right?
I think certainly, like, in bar pub quizzes and things like that, where if you're down between two, what teen singer, Justin Bieber was just in the news a week ago for something, go with Justin Bieber.
Right. Because they've got to find these questions somewhere, and they're probably just searching through the news of the day.
Yep.
And maybe they don't use the news of the day, you know, that's that article, you know, maybe it's not the point of whatever article it was they just read that popped up that day, but they might go, oh yeah, Justin Bieber, and they might go find some factoid about Justin Bieber and write that into a question too.
Mm-hmm. Our internal term for when around turns out has questions that, you know, somehow we all know from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
We actually hope for it. That's our best case scenario. We call that a Slumdog Millionaire round.
Yep.
So we're always like, Slumdog Millionaire, Slumdog, you guys. Millionaire, every question.
Right.
Relates to our...
You know, it's to keep our spirits up and to realize that, you know, we could go into this last round and slumdog it, you know, and just know every single hard question for some reason and win. You know, it's like, just always remember, like, you know, let's keep our spirits up here because we're only one round away from winning.
I think our team in part, I don't know, maybe other teams feel this way, but I think our team in particular, we have a tendency to overthink things. And I mean, my gut is that I feel like we do better in the harder rounds than we do in the earlier rounds, especially if you're in a quiz where the questions get harder and easier. You know, gauge your answer, you know, first question in the very first round. It's not going to be a trick question. It's not going to be something too complicated.
Right, but when it's
They're still trying to get the people who are drunk at the bar interested playing pub trivia. So it's going to be easy.
It's like in our trivia. I mean, really, you have to learn your trivia. You know, what are these people who put these questions together like? How do they structure these quizzes? Our thing is stacking. Right. And this is our internal term for if you've got a picture of somebody and you can't figure out who it is and it's one of two people and one of those people has been referenced in the quiz before.
Right.
Go with the answer that's been referenced in the quiz before. And this is only for us, only at our particular trivia night, where you have found that they will have a thread that runs through all of the different rounds.
Certainly, over the course of a few weeks, they tend to be clustered. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the general takeaway from this is to just watch out for how these quizzes are structured, the people who do them.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's start off the show now with our general trivia quiz segment, which is Pop Quiz Hot Shot. And here I have our random trivial pursuit card. We got our barnyard buzzers ready, everybody.
And we have to wait until you finish the question, right?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Let's do our best.
Blue Wedge, what country granted independence to Madagascar in 1960? Huh. Did not know this. Whoa. Colin.
I'm going to guess France.
Yes!
All right.
How did you figure that out?
Well, I just knew that France into the 50s, 60s had territories or colonies. I don't know what the term they used, but in Africa. So that was sort of my guess, yeah.
Awesome.
I was going to say DreamWorks. So you
well done. Pink Wedge. How are Access Hollywood host Billy Bush and George W. Bush related? Dana.
I'm going to guess. I think he's the nephew. Billy Bush is the nephew.
Incorrect. No.
Mm. Oh, that's wrong. They're okay, they're second cousins.
They're cousins.
Oh, okay.
So right. I guess you're right.
Grudgingly give you that point.
Yellow Wedge. How many King Edwards have ruled Britain?
Oh. I'm going to guess 3.
Incorrect.
2.
Incorrect. Just give me a number.
5.
Incorrect.
How many is it?
8.
That's tough.
That's a lot.
That is.
A lot of Eds.
That's a lot of Edwards.
Right. As immortalized in the song, I'm Eddie the Eighth, I am. Oh, wait.
Purple Wedge. What book inspired the Disney attraction Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, which is the best ride?
Wind in the Willows? Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah. By Kenneth Graham.
Oh, well, maybe I didn't ever know that.
That's a fantastic ride. But yeah, it was. I love it.
I remember being so young that I was scared of that
ride. It was.
Ride.
It's
yeah,
scary.
Yeah.
You go to hell. You die in a car crash and go to hell.
It's the talking animals that die.
Hell. Like, yeah, it's awesome.
Dana's least favorite ride. Talking animals.
Hell and die. Anthropomorphized animals.
All right, Green Wedge Science. A lab to produce what illicit drug was discovered in 2000 in an abandoned Kansas nuclear missile silo?
Oh.
Chris.
Crystal meth.
Incorrect.
What? How is it not crystal meth?
You were so sure.
I know.
Colin.
MDMA, ecstasy.
Incorrect.
LSD.
Correct. Oh. It's all trippy and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a trippy place
Kansas
to do that.
Kansas nuclear missile silo.
That was a weird card, man. That was a weird Trivial Pursuit card.
Okay, last orange question.
Still one
more.
It's getting weirder.
What is a literal translation of karaoke? And it's a multiple choice.
I'm just waiting
choice.
For you to...
It's a multiple choice.
Empty all orchestra. Right.
Empty orchestra.
Yes.
I
didn't even have
to say that. Okay. Embarrassing singing.
Yeah, what are the other two?
Embarrassed businessmen.
The choices are empty orchestra, tiny voices, or drunken singer.
That one. That's how I do it.
All right, and now we have our Kickstarter backer questions as well. And this one is from across the pond, Ben and Freya Hall from York, UK. All right. And their question is, what is pogonophobia? The fear of what?
Pogonophobia?
Pogonophobia. And that's spelled P-O-G-O-N-O-phobia.
My goodness.
Dana.
Not having a pogo stick. Or fear of mosh pits.
Fear of mosh pits.
Yeah.
Sadly, incorrect.
I have no guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It is the fear of beards or facial hair. And the trick thing about phobias or all of the phobia names is they're actually not Latin or Roman language based. It's completely Greek based. So the fear of heights is acrophobia.
Yes, okay.
Not altophobia.
Yes, okay.
So, you know, the Greek words are a little trickier. So pogono
is a Greek for a beard.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Ben said that he learned this phobia in a games review in Amiga Power magazine.
Nice.
I wonder what game it was that mentioned it. Okay, our second backer question is from Amber Thiessen from Redmond, Washington. And her question is, the food additive ethylene diamine tetraacetic acid, which is known as EDTA, is used in sodas To do what? My hint is the soda being the key clue. Okay. And where do sodas come from?
Oh, where do sodas come from?
Where do they come from?
Or where do sodas...
Well, when a mommy soda and a daddy soda love each other very much.
They make a baby soda.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one of those little small pint-sized cans? That's the little right. Or the 8-ounce cans?
Baby sodas.
I think I'm off, but I knew that they put in an additive in some root beers to make them frothier, but I guess that's not what you're going for.
You said frothy. No, incorrect.
Does it keep the carbonation from leaking out, or does it...
Incorrect. Where do sodas usually reside?
On my shelf.
Yeah, at the grocery store.
Where do sodas reside? Yeah.
Like, what is their container?
In aluminum. Oh,
so they won't react?
Is it the lining or something that keeps it from reacting with the aluminum?
Well, close. So it is specifically to trap metal particles in food.
Oh.
And so Amber wrote in and saying that she learned about this because she was enjoying some canned beer that didn't use EDTA, and you could taste the metal.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And so EDTA is basically to remove or to lighten,
wow.
I guess,
that's
metal
I like
flavor.
That. All right. Huh.
And Amber's interesting fact is that Amber has survived a tornado, a flood, and a fire. And now
come to California.
Now yeah. Amber's waiting for an earthquake, volcano, and hurricane.
Right. I think okay. If she gets an avalanche on her punch card, the next disaster's free, right?
Oh, yeah. Six disasters get the next one free. All right. Good job, everybody's brains. That was a very eccentric motley crew of questions.
Yeah. Have we ever gotten a backer question right yet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
We've gotten a few of them, right?
You guys are good quiz masters.
Yeah, they are. They're awesome questions. So it's time for our topic of the week. And our topic today is all about advertising, ad campaigns, and commercials. Brought to you by Mountain Dew, code purple.
And Jack Link's beef jerky. Yeah.
No, I'm totally
No,
kidding.
These are really not brought to us by those products.
No,
yes,
no,
yes,
not
yes,
at all.
But if they do want to sponsor us.
Code purple does not exist. Man, God, so this is a pretty giant topic. God, where should we start? I guess it's always more fun to talk trash. So let's talk about like maybe the big snafus or the failed attempt at advertising.
Yeah, failure is always interesting.
Absolutely.
So in the 50s, 7-Up decided to try to market itself as baby food. They said, well, kind of. They said that their ingredients were so pure you could feed them to a baby. And in their picture, they had a 11-month-year-old drinking it as if it were a bottle. And they said, oh, for your toddler, you can do 50% 7-Up and 50% milk and make a bubbly drink.
Just right in the bottle.
It didn't last. It didn't.
No, I can't imagine so.
So you're
no.
telling me a product that contains a lot of sugar and gives your baby gas. That didn't last. That's amazing. Yeah.
Mix it with milk, too.
No, and your baby messed up on sugar.
My question is, well, I mean, 7-Up is a lemon or it's acidic drink. Mm. When you mix it with milk, doesn't it curdle?
I think it's only if it has like real lemon
actual
or
lemon
yeah, actual.
Juice.
Yeah, I mean,
it's artificial.
Yeah, and no diss to the fine people at 7-Up, but
right.
Yeah.
Plus, babies, they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the milk is curdled. They don't.
Babies have no purchasing power.
Yeah,
it's a very soft cheese that's formed.
They could eat the curdles with their.
It's just squeezed out of the bottle like toothpaste. It's not
7-Up cheese. That's our next project.
7-Up and milk.
So,
drink your chew.
Young boy choked on 7-Up.
7-Up.
So that campaign didn't last then, it sounds like.
Big surprise.
Yeah.
You know, at least I remember when I was growing up hearing from my parents that, you know, the Edsel, the Ford Edsel, was just synonymous with failure.
What? Ford?
The Ford Edsel.
It was a
brand. Yeah, okay. Right. It was a division, I guess, technically of Ford, and they had spun off a new line. But it's sort of widely regarded, like even today, as one of just the most colossal failures on many fronts of advertising, and product rollout.
Why?
Well, so, you know, in the 50s, Ford was facing a lot more competition from other car companies. And they really, I guess, were under the gun to come up with a new hit. And so they decided to come up with a new midsize sedan. They hired a, you know, PR advertising agency, came up with 20,000 names. 20,000 possible names between them and the Ford staff. And some of these names now are hilarious. I mean, I'd throw a few of these out there. These are some of the proposed suggestions.
For a car.
For a car, that's right. The Mongoose Civic. Oh.
That's horrible.
The
don't they
cobra.
Eat snakes?
Yeah.
The Utopian Turtle Top.
Absolutely.
That's Urban Dictionary.
These sound like things that were translated from another language, exactly. The Pastelogram. The Varsity Stroke.
That's from Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, that's definitely an Urban Dictionary. If it will be by the end of this podcast.
What time frame is this? Like, what decade?
So this was early 50s, early to mid 50s.
And they didn't think Varsity Stroke could be...
they thought it was 7-Up in the 50s.
I know, it was a very innocent time.
And then, there was also... This one was not bad, the Resilient Bullet. I think that was a pretty good suggestion.
Oh,
they did a lot of focus testing and research, and in one of the sort of the first missteps, decided to name the car the Edsel instead, mm-hmm. which was actually named after Edsel Ford, which was Henry Ford's only son. Mm-hmm. And this was a name that people had specifically rejected during the focus testing.
Yeah,
they said it sounded like some farm equipment or something like
that. Oh, it does.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're kind of already off on the wrong foot by ignoring the product advice. But anyway, the whole thing was shrouded in secrecy. So they were running ads, you know, for months and months leading up to it, promising like the Edsel is coming. And they would show you little glimpses of the logo, but they wouldn't show the car. So the whole thing was meant to be a suspense buildup. They would have blurry photos of the car or the silhouette underneath a tarp or something like that.
It sounds like it might have been a little bit ahead of its time.
It might have been. You know, the other problem was that the car itself was, frankly, kind of a lemon. It sounds like they had so many problems rolling them off the line in functional condition. On launch day, they only had 68 cars ready to sell. This was nationwide. Now,
this sounds like a car unicorn.
Yeah.
Did it really exist?
It rolled out.
Oh, people bought them.
And people bought some of them, yeah.
Did they sell all 68?
They probably did sell all 68.
But it was a lemon. I mean, that was essentially what was wrong with the Edsel, right?
It was
a
lemon. It cost a lot of money. And it was ugly, you know, so it rolled out. And because no one had been able to see it, they're kind of taking a gamble and hoping that people would like it.
Yeah.
The critics said, so, you know, it had one design feature that they still talk about today. They call it the horse collar, or it was like an impact ring on the front of the car.
Urban Dictionary.
If you Google the Edsel, you can see this weird thing in the front. And people said that it made the car look like a Pontiac pushing a toilet seat. another reporter said it looked like an Oldsmobile sucking a lemon.
Nice. You know, I kind of like it. It looks like a cartoon vampire car.
You know, and the irony is that it did have some good features. It was one of the first, if not the first car to have standard seatbelts. But that was an optional upgrade at the time.
Right. But that was like a turnoff at the time, because at the time people were rejecting this idea that you had to wear seatbelts. Yeah. They were like, I don't know if we're seatbelts.
Like, you don't know me. I could have a cocktail in the morning.
So it had some good features, but it was just doomed to success. I mean, they didn't listen to their focus testing. They spent $450 million in 1950s.
At that time.
I've read estimates that that's over $2 billion in today's money, essentially down the drain. And they pulled the plug about 2 years later on the car.
What do you bet they named it after the owner's son, just so that way their project wouldn't get killed, even though it was sucking really bad?
Right.
I think he was long dead at the time, right?
Yeah.
He was. Well, and apparently Henry Ford II didn't want that name even, I guess.
Henry Ford II. His son's name was Edsel?
Henry Ford II, I believe, was Henry Ford's grandson.
Grandchild.
His son was Edsel.
When you get named Edsel, you're like, listen, how about I'll just name my child after my father instead of myself? I'll do for my child what my father couldn't do for me. Really? Henry Ford had one son? That's because the others, when they were in the womb, heard about the fact that their big brother was named Edsel. And they were just like, they strangled themselves at the umbilical cord.
Dark.
Wow.
Weird fanfiction.
So happy thoughts. Yeah, happy thoughts basically associated with the
bright and simple.
So I wouldn't say this is a failed ad campaign, but it was kind of unfortunate, and not a lot of people know this. So obviously there are a lot of instances of using movies as like a giant ad vehicle, right? We've seen it in Top Gun. Increased the Navy recruitment by zillions.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Wizard from back in the day, Power Glove.
I wanted that so bad.
Oh my god, yeah.
In Super Mario Brothers 3. Do you guys remember the original, the 1971 Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Oh, of course.
I do remember this movie.
Of course.
Beloved.
Classic.
So great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody loved it except for that one creepy tunnel scene.
Yeah. I said good days.
So, not a lot of people know this, but that movie, the 1971 starring Gene Wilder, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, was actually a marketing vehicle for candy, to sell candy. Now, so what happened was, going back in the beginning, you know, it didn't really work out so well. The movie's great, but the history of the movie, Quaker Oats was in talks with a movie producer, a film producer. His name is David Wolper. Quaker Oats was trying to release a new type of candy from one of their candy subsidiary. Mm. And David Wolper, the producer, convinced the company, who had absolutely no experience in filmmaking or that
entertainment at all.
Exactly. Or that scale, to back the film entirely. So the movie was funded entirely by Quaker.
Wow.
So not only that, they also had to buy the rights to Roald Dahl's original book.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just for the pure purpose of promoting Quaker Oats' new, and they named it the Wonka Bar.
Okay, so I always wondered about that. I mean, I remember as a kid having the Willy Wonka candies.
Right. Nerds.
Right, and I think I had assumed it was, you know,
so that was actually after. Because eventually the Wonka candy company got sold to Nestle.
Ah.
And then they made Nerds, they made, you know, other stuff.
Everlasting Gobstopper.
So what candy did they release with the movie?
So they're trying to time it so that when the movie would come out, the candy, the Wonka bar in 1970s would also come out too. But the bars were released in stores, but there was a giant production recall because the bar tasted like...
Well, a fat German kid fell in the chocolate river. It's real.
It tasted horrible, and they had a recall. So really, when the movie came out, maybe if you're lucky, you got a... gross candy bar out of
I've got the golden ticket.
and it's weird because I mean obviously Quaker Oats was trying something new, and they couldn't make the bar tasty enough to meet expectations of the movie. And that's also the reason why the original book is called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, is that the name switch?
Yeah, to Willy Wonka for the movie.
To get the Willy Wonka brand out there.
That makes
completely
sense.
Now,
it's almost like reverse product placement.
Now, and that was actually smart. Roald Dahl was not a master of branding because you name the thing after its most interesting central character, right? You know, so I mean, the fact that movie, you know, what's interesting about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is the character of Willy Wonka. He's so crazy, right?
I guess. But, although I had heard that he wasn't that happy with the movie.
He was very disappointed.
Oh, I bet.
Because that, well, I mean, like, exactly what you said. He, in his eyes, Charlie was the main character, and the movie didn't pay attention more to Charlie's
very
backstory.
True. Yeah, Charlie was just sort of there, you know, advancing the plot along.
Right, right.
Charlie was like the cipher that the viewer, you know, he was the know-nothing that the viewer could kind of go along with, right? Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, in the book, it was really Charlie's journey as the main character, and being such a fantastic person is what got Charlie from poverty to riches, right?
Right, right, right. They lucked out getting Gene Wilder. I mean, I can't imagine anybody else.
Well, that was the crazy thing is that's the other reason why Roald Dahl was really disappointed with the film, was because all of his picks for playing Willy Wonka, the producers and the film team did not listen to, including one of the old Doctor Who actors.
Oh, he could have been Willy Wonka, sure.
But they went with a popular American actor. But
that's really interesting.
The movie's very good. It is. It departs in everywhere from the book as much as it possibly can. And what's interesting, of course, is the Johnny Depp version is actually much more true to the book.
Mm-hmm.
Very very, very close to the book from the title.
Mm-hmm. From the songs. Poetry. Yeah.
The Oompa Loompa songs are actually the songs that are in Roald Dahl's. They actually took his lyrics in the book and set them to music and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
In the spirit of advertising, the bar didn't make it, but the movie was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And now Wonka candy and there's even Wonka ice cream. They sell it in upside down pints.
If you
know, so everything is printed upside down on the pint and the cap is on the bottom.
That's cool.
Ice cream. What they really hit on was, well, how do you do, because Wonka's candies are impossible candies, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like that's the cool thing about the candy is that it's impossible for it to exist in real life. So instead of just doing chocolate bars and nerds and things like that, now they just try to think outside the box and do all kinds of crazy character, you know, or not character, but flavor combinations.
Presentations and things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or things that change flavor.
Yeah. So upside down ice cream.
I'm waiting for the tomato soup and roast beef
gum.
Blueberry gum. Dare to dream. I always found it very fascinating when I was a kid because I read all of these things like Uncle John's Bathroom Reader or you know, various magazines and articles and things about quirky facts you might not know. And you always heard this stuff about when such and such company went to such and such a country, they would translate their popular advertising slogan, and then this is what the translation would be. And so I decided for this, for advertising, I was going to research a whole bunch of these, and we'll talk about these. So the one that I always, always love to quote is that in China, when Pepsi was advertising back in the 80s, Pepsi was advertising back in the 80s, they had the slogan, "Come alive with the Pepsi generation." This was badly translated into Chinese, and the actual, what the meaning that came out was, "Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the dead." And then I actually had heard that they hastily changed it to something more like, "Come alive, you're in the Pepsi generation," which unfortunately actually read more like, "When you resurrect, your body will be made of Pepsi." I had also heard that Chevy had tried to sell the Chevy Nova in Spanish-speaking parts of the world. But, of course, Nova means doesn't go.
Right. I've heard that one before. Yeah.
I've certainly heard that when KFC tried to translate its slogan, "Finger looking good," into Chinese, it was translated into "eat your own fingers." Parker Penn apparently had a pen that said, "It won't leak and embarrass you." But they used in Spanish embarazar, which does not mean to embarrass you, but to become pregnant.
The pen will not impregnate you.
Has this been a problem?
And this is a phrase that's actually come back and entered back into like American popular culture. Chinese name of Coca-Cola, they just took, because what they do, you know, when they try to phoneticize an English language word into Chinese is that they take characters that have the readings like Coca-Cola, right? Yeah. And they put them all together. But unfortunately, the characters that Coke chose read "bite the wax tadpole." Or something along those lines. I'd heard all of these, you know, before, and I wanted to do the research and find the absolute best ones. The really interesting thing that I found out about all of these things that you guys have, you said you've heard before, brought them up, is that every one of them is false. Every single one of these things that were presented to us as true is an urban legend.
Nice.
But they make such good stories, Chris.
I know, they sound so great. Even the Embarazar pregnant one, like, it sounds so perfect. No one can find any evidence of it. And people are like, "Look, this company would not make such a dumb mistake. Like, you can find somebody who speaks Spanish to translate the thing into Spanish."
And also,
like,
being a Chinese Mandarin speaker, I can disprove two of those.
Right.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah, I did not know that the vast majority of these were false. I had read about the Chevy Nova, unfortunately, and I've told that story.
I have told that story as
true, and I wish I could take it back now.
My Spanish teacher told me that story.
Yeah. Apparently, the Chevy Nova did very well. Yeah, Spanish speaking.
Well, yeah. So the article that I read made a really good point. They said, you know, that it's, even though those words separately can technically mean "it does not go,"
right?
It's so colloquially wrong that they said it would be like an English speaking person not buying a dinette set because it said it was a notable dinette set, like notable no table.
Right.
It would be that level of ridiculousness.
Yeah. So it's like, that is what it means, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people would look at it and process that.
I just saw a sign and it said "Kids exchange," but both words were together.
Right.
Oh, I've seen that.
"Kids sex change."
Oh,
I've seen that.
There is a fantastic website, a fake website called PennIsland.com.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's like, welcome to PennIsland.com, where you can get all of your favorite pens.
Pen needs.
And there's like a picture of an island with pens on it. It's wonderful.
Oh, now I get
it.
Ding.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the best parts about trivia is the misconceptions.
And, next time your friend is like, hey, did you hear about the Chevy Nova? You're like, that's
actually.
And then you lose a friend.
Oh, yay.
It's worth it. It's worth it. It's well worth
it's,
it.
It's yeah. worth being yeah. right. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick mnemonic break. And the mnemonic today is related to advertising. So handy because it's always asked in pub trivia and it's very, very quick. And now you can learn all the names of the elves from Rice Krispies.
Yes.
That comes up all the time.
It has come up like twice.
And we
and that's
still get
a
it
lot.
Wrong.
You'd be surprised how often we get it wrong with a 33 1/3% chance.
So who's who on the Rice Krispie box? And here's the mnemonic.
Oh, and just for our listeners who may not know, we're talking about Snap, Crackle, and
Pop.
Right. Yeah.
So Snap, Crackle, and Pop, three elves. You can only tell the difference by the hats or, you know, by the costumes they wear. There's a baker. There's like a music band leader one.
Right.
And another one who just has like a stocking.
He's kind of just more like generic elf.
Yeah, yeah, like pajama hat. So my quick mnemonic is Ginger Snap, Pop Music, and Crack of Dawn.
Okay.
So Ginger Snap is Snap, the baker.
Oh, okay.
Bakers
okay.
bake Ginger right. Snap cookies. Pop Music. Pop is the band leader.
Pop okay. music.
So music.
Okay, pop music.
And Crack of Dawn, he's kind of wearing pajamas, so he's waking up Crack of Dawn. Crack is the pajama guy.
Good. That is a good one.
So Ginger Snap, Pop Music, and Crack of Dawn.
Did you make this up yourself?
Yes, I did.
Good job. A
little bit of trivia. In the 1950s, they actually added a fourth elf.
Poochie.
Snap, Crackle, Pop, Poochie.
Coochie Pop.
Yeah.
His name is kind of close. It's Pow.
Pow. Oh, yeah, okay.
Snap, crackle, pop, and Pow.
So, obviously, Snap, yeah. crackle, and Pop are, you know,
yeah.
Represent the sounds. So, Pow is to represent the explosive nutritional value of
this is not describe food as explosive.
Oh,
no,
man.
How do you know?
Explain to me why this did not work for them.
Rules of three.
Yeah. Rules of three.
And also
explosive. No one cares about, also yeah. nutritional value.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Pal is living under a bridge these days. It's really sad.
I was imagining an elf with a general hat on. Mm. Is that what he was wearing?
I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, like a little army,
to
a little
support
army
the
hat
war.
Or something.
Yeah.
Right. The war effort.
The war against bad nutrition. Yeah. And here's some other.
There's also Poop, who represents how rice helps you avoid colon cancer. Also, didn't really go over well with the kids.
Do we have like a quota on poop references for
no.
each episode?
No.
Is it? Oh, okay.
No,
all right.
We can, no, we can sky's do as many as we want.
So other foreign names of Snap, Crackle, and Pop. In Denmark, they're Piff, Paff, Puff.
Yeah, I live in Denmark. It's awesome.
In Germany, it's Nisper, Nasper, Noosper.
Why is every word so much longer in Germany?
I know. I always feel that way, too.
Yeah.
So, well, I can't really come up with mnemonics for foreign languages, but
you're on your own.
Ginger Snaps, Pop Music, Cracking On for the English one.
I like that. That's good.
Good mnemonic break.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh. The joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Awesome. All right, let's go back to advertising. And I have a quick quiz, ad quiz, and I kind of broken them up into brief categories. So get your buzzers ready. Yeah. Number one, sing me the Toys R Us jingle.
Oh, dear.
Chris.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. Jenny
Bush. Oh, it's cheating.
Lots of toys and other crap that I can play with. From bikes to trains to video games. It's the best toy store there is.
Gee whiz.
I don't want to grow up, because if I did, I wouldn't be a Toys R Us kid. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Very good. Good job.
What is the part that I'm missing?
I don't know. I actually don't. I just want you guys to sing it.
Well done. Right. Well done. Well done.
Toys R Us, formerly known as Children's Supermart.
Huh.
That was a good
Back
chase.
In the days. Yeah. All right. Number two, sing me the Band-Aid jingle. Chris.
I am stuck on Band-Aid because Band-Aid's stuck on me.
Correct. Nice. Bonus point. Can you sing me the State Farm jingle?
Like a good neighbor State Farm is there. Oh, we can all do it.
Yeah.
So both songs are written by Mr.
Hold on.
Elvis Costello. Just kidding.
The State Farm jingle and the Band-Aid songs are written by, I know this.
I have a guess.
Colin, guess.
Is it Paul Anka?
Incorrect.
Mm. Is it Prince?
Just kidding. Bob Dylan. I forget who it is, but.
Barry
Manilow. Yes, he was a jingle writer. That's right. Yep.
Barry Manilow.
Barry freaking Manilow.
Man. Copacabana.
Yeah.
Barry Manilow.
And I'm going to name a few ridiculous but real infomercial products, and you have to tell me what product it is.
Okay.
Okay.
The name, or can we say what it does?
Okay. Kush Support, and that is spelled KUSH, Kush Support. Colin.
Is this one of the ones you put under your couch cushions to prop them up? Is that one?
Incorrect.
Mm.
It's,
Is it like a koosh ball?
Incorrect.
What is
the name of that? No.
It is an object that you put for ladies to put in their cleavage while they go to sleep so that their breasts will not sag when they sleep on the side.
What?
Okay.
So you place it between your boobs,
and
then you go to sleep, and it's supposed to prevent wrinkles.
Oh my goodness!
On your boobies.
Wow. All right. Thoroughly tested, I'm sure. Rigorous
clinical trials,
evaluated by the Food and Drug
Administration. The Breast Institute.
Our next infomercial product is the Tiddy Bear, and that's spelled T-I-D-D-Y.
Oh my!
The Tiddy Bear. Chris.
You put it between your breasts. just for fun.
It's shaped like a bear.
and it's a bear.
It's Yogi Bear's fantasy.
So it's more discreet, I guess.
I have no clue. Titty, I don't even know what the reference is.
You guys never seen this infomercial?
No, apparently.
Everybody go YouTube it right now if you're listening. Go YouTube it. It is basically, the commercial starts with, tired of seatbelt burns or seatbelt rubbing on your shoulder.
Yeah.
It moves the seatbelt down. It was, yeah.
It is. Wow. It's a little teddy bear.
And you grip it around the belt strap, right?
So your shoulder won't get, scars from seatbelts, because that's so annoying.
Yeah. People slam on the brakes.
Yeah, I still don't get the name reference.
My favorite part of all infomercials is when they show you using a good competing product, but terribly.
Yes.
It's like, can't open potato chip bags. Yeah. Like somebody just pulls the bag and all looks, and it's always in black and white and explodes.
They're always the most incompetent consumers on the planet.
I saw one today for just a thing that like puts a nail into your wall, and it's just like, tired of those sticky hooks, and they pull a command hook off the wall, and it takes like a square foot of paint off
right,
of it when they
yank
it off the wall.
Or they're using the hammer, and there's like six hammer holes in the wall for a nail.
No human has this problem.
There's got to be a better way.
My favorite one is the black and white montage of this lady, and it's in the VO was, tired of stuffing that pizza in your toaster oven. And this lady's got a giant circular whole pizza pie.
It's like an 18-inch pizza.
She's trying to stuff in the toaster. Oh, man.
So, Karen, thank you very much for that. And I actually have brought, for my return, a product and advertising-related quiz as well. I think we're going to be able to rush through this pretty fast. I am going to name the mascot, or the advertising character.
Love it.
And you are going to tell me the product they pitched.
All right.
Okay.
So, if I were to say Cool Spot, you guys would say 7-Up.
Yes.
What?
I would have said
the
that.
Spot, the 7-Up spot? Okay, oh jeez, I guess I should have saved that one.
Cool Spot.
I didn't know he had the one in sunglasses.
It's just the red
cool
spot.
The red spot. Cool spot. Sunny the Cuckoo Bird. Karen.
Cocoa Puffs.
Absolutely. The Noid. Colin.
Domino's Pizza.
Yes. Jeffrey Giraffe. Looks like Karen.
Toys R Us.
Yes. Toucan Sam. Dana.
Fruit Loops.
Absolutely. Snoopy. Dana.
MetLife.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Right.
Sugar Bear. Karen.
Sugar.
This is exactly what happened in testing, by the way.
Sugar Smacks?
Colin.
It's Golden Crisp.
Golden Crisp. Precisely. You might be thinking of Honey Smacks, which had
with
some
sort
of a frog. Yeah.
Now, I just have a very quick anecdote here for the Golden Crisp. So when I was growing up, Golden Crisp was actually called Sugar Crisp. Super Sugar Crisp. And I remember watching cartoons one morning with my sister, my little sister, and a commercial comes on for Super Sugar Crisp. And we call it to my mom in the other room. My sister's like, Mom, will you buy us some Super Sugar Crisp? And my mom, without missing a beat from the other room, says, I'm not buying you Super Sugar anything.
And that's why they changed the name. Ladies and gentlemen, all right, here we go. Spuds McKenzie. I need a specific answer, Karen.
Budweiser Light.
Yes.
Spuds McKenzie was the pitch dog for Bud Light.
Yes.
Sunny, not Sunny the Cuckoo Bird, but Sunny, S-U-N-N-Y. Colin?
Is it Raisin Bran?
God,
it is!
Yeah.
Son, here's one from back in the day. Sprout. Colin.
He was the Green Giant, right?
Green Giant.
His little sidekick.
That's
right. He was the Scrappy Doo his Scooby-Doo.
Speaking of Scrappy Doos, Punchy.
Oh.
Karen.
Hawaiian Punch.
Hawaiian Punch.
Nice.
Charlie the Tuna. Dana.
Starkist.
Yeah. Another tough one in testing.
I never understood that character. He wanted to be eaten was the whole premise of that character.
Absolutely.
Why is he like a beatnik? He's like a cool tuna.
Yeah, he's like Charlie Tuna.
Colin's going to get this one. Morris the Cat. Dana buzzed in first.
Wait, is it Meow Mix?
No. Colin?
I think Karen had that
one. Okay, Karen.
Friskies.
No.
What? It's Nine Lives,
it's
isn't it?
It's Nine Lives. Yeah. Morris the Cat, the finicky cat. Speedy. S-P-E-E-D-E-E. Colin.
That was the original McDonald's mascot.
Yes, sir, it was.
What?
Speedy.
Was he a clown?
No, he was just a dude. He was a dude delivering you a burger.
With like a little hat, right?
Yeah,
I think,
just
a
little happy
just
face.
Just a little guy. Yeah.
Wow.
Your burger.
Wow.
Fred the Baker. Fred the Baker.
Oh.
Colin,
is this the Dunkin' Donuts guy?
Dunkin' Donuts, the most delicious coffee in the world. Last one, Mr. Whipple. Mr. Whipple. Colin,
that was Charmin.
Charmin, toilet paper. Mr.
Please
Whipple, the grocery
the
store owner. Yep, that's right. Didn't want people
squeezing.
Oh, he's
not the bear.
Charmin.
No.
No, it was an old man. It was a grocery. It was a crotchety grocery store manager, because Charmin was so soft, people would come into the store and just squeeze it.
Just to squeeze it. This was apparently a big problem.
In his store, and he said, "Don't
squeeze."
I like
the bears better now.
It's Charmin. Full marks all around. The 5 points.
That was a good one. Yes. That was a good one.
So we do have an ulterior motive of why today's show is about advertising. And
yes,
we have things to advertise. Sell out with me. Oh yeah, sell out. Tonight, the record company's gonna give me lots of money, and everything's gonna be alright.
So I was up at the Penny Arcade Expo in Boston a couple of weeks ago, and you can right now go to wired.com/gamelife, or actually you can go to twitch.tv/wiredgamelife and check out the live shows that we did. I interviewed game designers like Kim Swift, who was the designer of a game called Portal, and Jordan Mechner, who was the designer of a game called Prince of Persia back in the day.
This little game called Prince of Persia.
Yeah, and we, you know, we actually, it was my first time ever actually doing a live, they were like daytime talk shows, essentially, where I talked to game developers, and we showed game demos, and we played audience games. And so go check those out. It's twitch.tv/wiredgamelife. We'll bring you to all those. And also, something that we do called Retro Game Roadshow, which is like Antiques Roadshow, but for old video games.
Oh, cool.
And that was a panel at Penny Arcade Expo, and you can go to twitch.tv/PAX, and you can actually watch the video that we did of Retro Game Roadshow. So I want everybody to check this out, because Retro Game Roadshow, especially if you care any little bit about old video games, and even if you don't, it's if you like watching Antiques Roadshow, you should check this panel out. We have no affiliation with Antiques Roadshow.
Awesome.
And our plug number two, Dana, we got big news.
My game just came out. My iPhone, iPad game just came out. Woo! It's called It's called T-Rex Tea Party. And you're a little dinosaur, and you run down the table and try to knock all the dishes off the table.
It's a very little dinosaur in this game.
Yeah. Well, you get bigger. You get bigger.
Or it's a giant
time.
Table. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the two. I'm not sure which.
They're really mean to you because your arms are too short to pour the tea properly.
Have a proper tea party.
You always wanted to be fancy.
And you made this game. Yeah. You're self-publishing it.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Design, artwork, promotions. Yeah. Dana's being humble here, but obviously she had some help, but it's...
A fun project to make.
And I did a little bit of voice work. Yes. And so did my fiance Regina. So we're both actually in this game as teacups that get smashed to death.
Yeah.
So we're in there.
So good job. I mean... Mm-hmm. We actually have jobs, everybody.
Yeah,
we do other things.
We have our own shameless plugs.
Yeah, that was our shameless plug segment, and hence advertising. And we have a final quiz segment.
All right.
Brought to you by Colin.
Yeah, so again, keeping with the kind of advertising and branding theme here, I put together a little quiz. A little bit of a grab bag here, but all about products and branding and logos. All right, so get your buzzers ready. In the Domino's Pizza logo... What domino tile is featured?
Oh.
Karen.
3-1.
Close.
3-2.
Yeah.
Wrong direction.
1-3.
It is. 2-1? Dana is correct. It is the 2-1 tile. Two
really?
In the lower left, one in the upper right.
Huh.
And the dots actually represented the three.
Pepperoni.
little pepperoni. they represent the three domino stores that were in existence when they created the logo in 1969.
Oh.
And apparently the original plan was to add new dots for each store.
But
they abandoned that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
According to the manufacturers of M&Ms, what is the most common color M&M in a bag of average M&Ms? I think that was Chris.
Brown.
Incorrect.
No.
Karen.
Red.
Incorrect.
What?
Yellow.
Incorrect. It is blue. The blue.
Wait, blue was a new color.
Blue was a new color. Blue was added
it so much that
it's the distribution of a bag of M&Ms. Mm-hmm. Blue, according to M&Ms, should be 24% of the bag should be blue.
Oh.
That's these are their stats. So blue was added in
Karen, you look disappointed. Yeah. You're gonna punch
Karen's gonna run her own experiment. She's angry.
I think it used to be brown. I wanna say that maybe I'm just it was outdated.
It's so they retired tan when they brought blue back.
That's right.
They got rid of tan. This fast food franchise, in many ways considered sort of the originator of the Southern California fast food franchise movement, started in the early 1940s, predates Disneyland and McDonald's. What fast food franchise is this? Chris.
Hardee's.
Incorrect.
Really?
Karen.
The only reason why you're hesitating is I bet the other name, which is Carl's Jr.
Correct.
Yes. Oh, really?
That's right.
So what's the difference?
Well,
I knew they're the same thing.
They originally merged, I believe, but it originally started by Carl Karcher in Southern California. That's right. Before McDonald's. Not long before McDonald's. All right. In the 1990s... radio host Howard Stern helped make what beverage company a household name by frequently promoting it on his show? Howard Stern helped Chris.
Snapple.
That is correct.
Yes!
Yes. Howard's, really? He is widely credited with, along with Wendy the Snapple Lady, mm-hmm. being one of the main reasons that Snapple became very popular in the 1990s.
Did they pay him, or he really
liked
it? Oh,
no, it was a paid promo. But he did always go out of his way to stress that he really did enjoy the product, and he knew the, or, you know, got to know the company pretty well. Yeah.
That's cool.
What kind of cow is featured in the packaging and logos for Ben and Jerry's ice cream?
Regular. Just a regular cow.
Karen.
Holstein.
It is a Holstein. Yes, correct. The classic
Wagyu.
Black and the Wagyu. And we'll wrap it up here with this one. Specifically, what type of creature is featured in the Starbucks logo?
Oh.
I don't know specifically, but mermaid.
Incorrect. No. Karen.
Siren.
Closer. Dana, you want to take a guess?
Well, now I was going to say starfish, because there's starfish on her, which is a creature, a real creature.
The creature featured in the Starbucks logo is a Melusine.
What?
Which is a very specific type of siren with a split tail.
Yeah.
So if you notice, she has the two halves of her tail coming off to each side, and the original logo is based on an old European woodcut.
Huh.
How do they reproduce then? Where are the reproduction organs?
I think that's beyond the scope of this episode.
This is, all of this is tackled in the movie The Little Mermaid 2, which no one's ever seen, but it has a in-depth 15-minute long explanation.
Hold on.
How this all works.
Well, let's think through this. If she has the fish part at the bottom,
yeah.
She probably doesn't have a womb. She probably lays egg cells.
It lays eggs, yeah.
But where does it live? Is it between the split tail?
We need an episode siren anatomy.
Let me throw this one out there.
Okay.
If they lay eggs, why they got belly buttons?
Oh.
Boom.
If so I maybe could drop my microphone, I would.
All right.
Melusine.
Melusine. Cool. Write a letter to Starbucks right now. All right. That's the end of our giant advertising episode.
Woo!
Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you, the listeners, for listening in. You can find us on Zune Marketplace, on iTunes, and also on our website, which is goodjobbrain.com. We're getting a lot of awesome reviews. Thank you guys so much for
thank
it's
you.
Overwhelming the support. Thank you and bye.
Thanks.
See you next week.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.